This is a Glassbox Media Podcast.
Hello, welcome to this. Every week we're pointing at each other saying, you go, no, you go, no, you go. It's like sort of like awkward kids on the phone. You hang up. No, you hang up. Yeah. This is the Blank Podcast, where we delve into those difficult moments of well-known people. And I'm Jim Daly. And pointing at me saying, no, you go, is Giles Paley-Phillips. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very good. Very good indeed. This is
quite giggly today, aren't you?
I am a bit giggly. What? It's 11:45 in the morning. It's a bit too late to be giggly. I don't know why. It just makes me laugh when we keep pointing at each other. We're too nice. Like one of us just needs to go. No, I'm doing the intro, but we're just we're just like, oh, you go.
Well, I think it's nice to mix it up. Otherwise, it's just like, you know, if it's just one of us doing it every week, it feels like, you know, you don't want any leaders of the band. Basically, we want to be John and Paul. We don't want to.
I'm Paul. Just, which one's
you're
which?
Paul, are you?
Am I Paul?
I'll be John, yeah.
Okay, so you're the cool one. I'm the less cool one.
You probably made more money.
if only we made Beatles levels of money, that'd be great. Well, look.
Anyway, this is a very special episode, isn't it?
Really special. It's our second special episode in recent times. Well, you know, things are happening with the pod, which is really, really exciting, and we want to share that with our listeners, because, you know, they share so much with us when they tweet us about their episodes they like, and emails and stuff. So, and we appreciate our listeners so much; they're so good to us. So, we just wanted to share back with a bit of exciting news, really.
Yeah. Do you want to tell them what the exciting news
you can
is?
Do
or shall
it.
I?
You can do it, John. You can do it.
Thanks. Well, the exciting news is we are going to release a book.
We are indeed.
A real book with pages and words on it.
That we've actually written the words to. Yes.
It's all about Blank Podcast.
It's about the Blank Podcast and sort of all the themes that surround it. It's called Blank, Why It's Fine to Falter and Fail and How to Pick Yourself Up Again. Which is, I think, is a really nice sort of summary of the pod itself, to be honest. Yeah. So it's perfect title. And the book is coming out next year. And essentially, this is the secret project that we've been working on, which I think hinted at sort of in a few episodes that we've got this thing that we've been doing, but we can't obviously talk about it. And now, you know, we are thankfully allowed to talk about it. And we've been very excited sitting on this news all year.
So
almost.
Excited. Yeah. So excited. Yeah. I mean, well, yeah, maybe even longer than that. I think it might even be like sort of 18 months when we signed the deal.
Yeah.
Signed our lives away to work on this book. But it's been a really fantastic process. And we're going to talk about that in this special podcast we're doing, because we've got our commissioning editor, Celine Hughes, has come on. Mm. And we're talking to her about, you know, what made them. She's commissioning editor for Quadrille Publishing, who are the lovely publishers putting out this book. And, yeah, we talked to her about, you know, the process, the collaborative sort of nature of nonfiction and working on this particular title. And we talk about why they wanted to publish the book, what excited them about it. And then, you know, we talk about our favourite blank moments as well. Because obviously Celine has had to go through and listen to a lot of the back catalogue. And, you know, you and I have been going through the back catalogue of podcasts and episodes and picking out our favourite bits. But it's not just, you know, this isn't just a book that's like kind of transcribed sections of the podcast. This is very much a book by, you know, with our words and our takes and thoughts on the various themes that come up in the podcast, you know, things like imposter syndrome, public failure, social anxiety, education, mentoring, sleep deprivation, grief, all these things that come up that our guests blank moments is that, you know, it's us talking about those and our own feelings on that. And then, you know, bits of, you know, paraphrased kind of sections of what people have said and talked to us about their own, you know, our guests' own takes on those things as well.
Yeah, it's sort of a bit of everything. There's a bit of sort of self-help in there. There's anecdotal stuff. There's obviously advice from the people on the podcast. There's bits where you can do your own takeaways, gratitude lists, that kind of thing, advice on sleep. It's got sort of a bit of everything, because I think this podcast covers so many subjects as well. And we discovered that really by going back through these episodes and writing this book. I think, you know, I certainly discovered so much more about this pod and what it means to me and the things I can take away from it and what our guests give us each episode. That was actually a bit of a sort of discovery, really. And you know, people will see that in the book. We have a bit of a sort of a journey ourselves writing it, but also in terms of what we've learned from the podcast as well. It's been a real proper journey the two of us have gone on. And I think that is sort of wrapped up in the book. And really, there's a bit for everyone, really, in the book.
Yeah.
And there's only 60 episodes. You know, there's been about 30 episodes since. So who knows? Yeah. We could do a follow-up, maybe. By the time the book comes out, there'll be another 60 episodes. there's just so much, you know, there's just so much richness from all these guests, and they all give us something different. And that's the beauty of the pod. And I think that's the beauty of the book as well, because we've then gone into what does that mean for us? And, you know, how did we translate what this person said, and what do we take away from it? Because I hope that our listeners are able to do that from each episode and from this book as well. And as Celine says, and we, you know, talk to Celine in a bit, having it written down almost is a different translation to what people say in the pod. And you can really investigate and dissect what these things mean to you. And I think that I certainly found that writing the book, and I hope the readers will get that as well from it. It's so funny. When we started this podcast, I was excited to work with you and meet famous people. And it's been so much more than that, this journey. And I think the book encapsulates that as well. So I'm really, really excited to share it with our listeners.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, can't wait for people to pick it up. And what I like about the book is that it's not just a companion to the podcast. You know, it's its own thing. And that's what's really exciting about it, is that you don't have to have listened to any of the Blank podcast to get stuff out of it. I think because it's, like we said, it's got kind of memoir. It's a bit memoir. It's a bit self-help. Yeah. You know, there's all these different elements within there. So, whether you're a fan of the podcast, or, you know, you've got friends or family that you think might benefit from a book, you know, about all these different subjects, where they, you know, they face their own difficult moments, then I think people will really get a lot out of the book. So that's really exciting that it's a thing on its own. It's not just, you know, and if you are a fan of the podcast, then it's, you know, double bubble.
A double bubble, indeed. Well, just to reiterate, the book is called Blank, Why It's Fine to Falter and Fail and How to Pick Yourself Up Again. It is available now to pre-order from various places. So, I mean, Celine did mention this.
Hive. Hive.co.uk, yeah. Which is helps support independent bookshops.
So that would be a good place
to go. Great one to cover. I'm a big fan of Big Green Bookshops on Twitter. At Big Green Bookshops, he's an independent trader, book trader. He's fantastic. So I always recommend people go to him.
Waterstones online.
But there's Waterstones, yeah. And obviously the big boys.
There are the big boys as well. I mean, to be honest, you know, everyone's in different situations. Wherever you can get it or normally get it, go for it.
Yeah.
If you are able to support the independent places that sell it, that'd be amazing. But, you know, as long as you get it, as you buy it, we'll be really happy.
Yeah.
And we hope that you enjoy it as well. So,
And it'll be out 18th of March,
2021. A year, and we'll be better than 2020.
Yeah, let's hope, yeah. I'm sure we'll be doing lots of events and stuff around it then.
Yes, we are working on some marketing now, aren't we? So we're planning to do some live stuff. So maybe,
whether that's sort of virtually live or we manage to get out in the real world again, we will let you know and keep you posted.
Indeed, yeah, because it'd be lovely if we can do live stuff to meet some of our listeners whilst selling the book. And you know, we love connecting with our listeners anyway, but if we get to do it face-to-face, that'd be lovely, especially as we've not really seen people for the last 7 months anyway. So just be nice to see other people, wouldn't it? in a real life setting.
It's always nice to see other people, yeah.
Well, anyway, shall we crack on with our guest? It's Celine Hughes from Quadrille, our commissioning editor. Such a lovely person. And she talks here about why they commissioned the book and also goes on to talk about some of the sort of background work with publishing and commissioning and a bit of advice for anyone out there that's maybe looking to publish a book. So this is a really interesting, different from what we normally do episode, but there's lots of really great stuff on this. So this is Celine Hughes from Quadrille on the Blank Podcast.
Well, how are you, Celine? I mean, this is kind of like I was just saying before you came on air. This is kind of you looking behind the scenes to some extent.
Yeah.
And the preamble is generally a bit like this, particularly since we've been working from home. Is kind of like, oh, have you pressed record? Are you is the microphone working? I'm just going to change the mic lead. Blah, blah, blah. Yes. It's become that way.
Yeah.
How has working from home been for you?
I have actually really enjoyed it. Which surprised me a little bit. There are certain key things I really miss. I miss the social interaction with my colleagues a lot. I don't feel like I have as much of an idea of what we're all doing. Just small things, you know. We used to turn around all the time to each other and sort of overhear each other's conversations on the phone and, you know, what author's done what or what book has come in or exchange ideas all the time. And now it feels much more stilted to message somebody and go, what have you been up to this morning? Or, you know. Yeah. So I've really, really missed that. But actually just being at home, I'm lucky I have a kind of dedicated desk area. I'm not in a small flat trying to work with somebody else from home. My partner's going into his own office, annoyingly for him. But I've actually quite enjoyed it. Having said that, it has now been 7 months since I've been in the office. And I don't know if it's doing untold damage to my mental health to be sitting at the same desk, not seeing any other humans.
Yeah.
I think I'm only genuinely only going to realise how it's been after I come out of it. Mm. But at the moment, I feel okay, bar missing my colleagues. But I do wonder if when I go back to the office, it'll all just sort of unravel a bit. I don't know.
I think there'll be like a week or two where everyone's in utopia and it's like, oh, seeing their colleagues, giving them hugs. Oh, how's your week? Genuinely interested in your weekend. You did what on the weekend? Oh, amazing. Let's chat by the water cooler. And then like a few weeks later, I'm like, oh, I've forgotten how much I hate this guy. Oh, yeah. I hate being here.
But
I think people will appreciate being, I think, with other people. I definitely miss interacting with people massively. This is great over Zoom. We get to see each other and chat, but it's not quite the same.
Yeah, no.
Well, I was thinking also, like, what people don't... I mean, we should say that the reason you're on here today is because we're talking about a new project that we've got coming out. But as a publisher, it's such a collaborative business.
Yes.
And I think people sometimes don't realise those aspects of it. Obviously, you're a commissioning editor. How does your role work? And, you know, and also, yeah, if you can sort of touch on that collaborative sort of aspect of publishing.
Yeah, sure. So, as a commissioning editor, I'm looking for new books to publish, and that might be that an agent sends me a proposal for a book, or it might be that I've come up with an idea, I've seen something, a trend, if you like, or an idea that I think has a space in the publishing world, and I might try and find an author for that idea. So it could come about in a couple of different ways. And personally speaking, for my own commissioning, what I'm always looking for is integrity and or originality. If I'm lucky, I get both, which I think we've got this time. So I'm with your book. So that was one of the many reasons why I wanted to publish it. Integrity and originality. So I guess the way that it works and the reason it's so collaborative is that I will work with an author or authors like you guys, and we quite often shape the book together, and you've got an idea of what you want to put into it and maybe loosely what shape you want it to take and what you want to say and what the message should be. And I might help you figure out exactly who the market is, how you want to frame things, how you might want to structure it. So I know that we all talked about a kind of narrative arc at the beginning of this process in the olden days when we actually met in person in the office, which seems like a lifetime ago now.
It does. It does.
And we might, you know, we might talk about that. And then, as you know, the process of writing is long and probably quite challenging. And you might come to a point when you think, oh, my God, I don't know how to say what I want to say, or I don't know what else to say. And that's when hopefully I can step in and help bring a different perspective, or, you know, a fresh pair of eyes. And then there's all the really fun stuff like the cover and stuff like that. And because this is narrative nonfiction and this it's not illustrated, we don't have the extra fun of pictures of any sort. But that's another part of my job, because at Quadrille, where I work and where we're publishing your book, we do a lot of illustrated nonfiction. So cookery books and craft books and gift books. And there's a lot of emphasis on photographs and illustrations and kind of drawing people into books that way.
I was going to say, actually, it's interesting, like you're talking there, like thinking about obviously coming from a fiction writing background. I've obviously written, mainly written children's books and adult fiction. Going to a non-fiction, which is the first thing I've ever done, it's the first time I've ever worked on a non-fiction book, and actually thinking about like how I would approach going to write a fiction book. I would probably write the whole thing, or at least a bulk of it, and then take that to a publisher, or my agent would take it and say, we've got this piece of work. Whereas obviously we came to you and pitched an idea, you know, as opposed to like a finished piece of work. It was just a generic idea of this thing, you know, around what the podcast is about, but then obviously expanding on that, on some of the themes and things like that, and how, you know, you obviously came back with your own ideas and stuff, and that collaborative kind of actually sort of developing the concept and the ideas was much more collaborative, as opposed to us just going away and writing a book and then giving it to you to sort of edit and try and, you know, it's been so interesting moving into a number. And do you find that quite a lot with the sort of pitches you get and the work you get? Do you get more kind of ideas and concepts pitched as opposed to sort of finished manuscripts?
Yes. Well, so I publish a lot of cookery, so yes. But people might have written maybe a couple of sample chapters, if we're going back to talking about nonfiction sort of narrative text. Yeah, they might have written a couple of sample chapters and then broadly know what they want to include in the book, and the proposal sort of sets out the kind of framework for the book. But because, as you say, because it's so collaborative, things develop and evolve all the time during writing the manuscript. And you know, what I liked about what you guys came back with was that there were some topics which I hadn't even thought you might cover, like education and mentoring and academia generally, I suppose. And I think that's a personal failing of mine, is because I loved school and did okay at it, that it wouldn't occur to me to talk about blank moments at school. That's not to say that I didn't have some bumpy bits to it, but when you came back with that chapter, I was like, oh yeah, I guess that is for a lot of people. In fact, a lot of their adult blank moments come from things that they have experienced at school, of course, or a lack of mentor, or a really significant mentor. So, yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that as an editor I enjoy most is being surprised and challenged by what authors come up with.
Well, we did, Giles. We definitely let the sort of the guests lead that, didn't we? Because that was a subject that kept coming up on the podcast, people talking about their education and mentoring. And I think with most of the chapters, it was, you know, led by what people talked about and themes that just kept reoccurring on the podcast. And we realised that so many people from different industries and different backgrounds kept having these similar themes and similar problems, and in a way the book then just sort of came together from that, because people kept talking about these things that we, Giles and I, then wanted to really delve into in ourselves. I found it a really, really fascinating process. it feels really nice for you to say authors like you guys at the start of this as well, because I never ever consider myself an author. So it's really nice to be one. Yeah, it's I mean, yeah. It's a really, you know, huge achievement. I'm very proud of it. It's been a weird sort of year of firsts for me this year. First serious acting role last year, week in a short film. It's only 10 seconds and non-speaking, but it still Ooh. Counts, apparently. First baby, first pandemic. I mean, it's been a year of...
Yeah. Yeah, so I think we've all had that as a first.
big year. But I found the writing process challenging at times, very challenging, interesting, really made me look at myself in many different ways I hadn't sort of done before. So, yeah, and people will see that in the way we go into these chapters in the books. A lot of it for Giles and I is really sort of digging into how we feel about these chapters and. I mean, it is almost like therapy at times, to be honest, really, you know, sitting down and challenging ourselves on these things. But the collaborative aspect, as you were saying, was really interesting. And this whole podcast is built on collaborative projects and me and Giles collaborating together, collaborating with our guest. And collaborating with you, Celine, on this has been really, really enjoyable, especially in those moments, blank moments, if you will, where there were challenges writing the book and being able to, I think we had a couple of Zoom calls or Skype calls or emails back and forth, being able to discuss that really helped for me develop those parts of the book. And I think maybe as someone that had never written a book before, I didn't appreciate just how much of a collaborative effort that could be. I think I thought it was go away, write your book, come back to me when you got something. But actually, it was way more sort of formative than that. And yeah, I found that surprising and actually really quite enjoyable.
Oh, good. Well, it's funny because it makes me think that in what you've written in the book and in the writing of the book, you kind of come full circle. Because one of the things I keep thinking about in relation to your podcast and the book is how important it is to talk.
Yeah.
Talk all the time to people and share. And the more you talk and the more you hear about other people's experiences or points of view even, the less alone you feel and the less blank, actually. And so it's funny that that is the content of the book, but also in the process of writing it, it has been helpful to talk.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite nice and a quite nice illustration of how important it is, to connect with people. I mean, that's one of some of the subjects that have come up with your guests. And one of the many reasons I also wanted to publish this book, because I don't want to sound sort of simplistic about this, but effectively it's two men talking about their feelings and about communication. And I feel like there needs to be more of that, because there still is a little bit of a reticence with men talking about, you know, emotional issues or mental health issues. And I do think that this book, just by virtue of the fact that it's written by two guys, and you have a lot of male guests on, but to be fair, you have female guests as well. And I think just by virtue of it being two men talking to other people about what's going on in their life, what difficulties they've faced, how they've overcome them, and why it's okay to talk about it, it's really significant. And I thought, that was one of the other reasons I thought this was so important to publish.
That's great. And that comes up again a lot on the podcast, Charles, doesn't it? I mean, we do joke sometimes on the pod, it is like sort of free therapy, but I think nearly every episode we get to the end of it and you, me and our guest always feel better, don't we? Just for having had this hour and a half chat. And it's so true that, you know, some days we do the pod and I'm really ready for it. Some days I'm a bit overloaded or overwhelmed with stuff. And I sit down and think, I haven't got time for the pod today. But I always feel better at the end of it. And as Celine says, it's just from talking. Even if when we try and let our guests talk more than anyone on the pod, but you and I still interject. And if feelings come up during the pod, we'll make them known that that's made me feel this kind of way. And I just think, I really think there is no substitute for talking. And I know, I hope our book and our podcast is an example of that.
Yeah. But also, it's talking and hearing from people who you assume as an outsider are just, they were just inherently successful. Yeah. You know, they were just sort of born this way to have a high profile, to be high achievers, and just to know that they go through blank moments and challenges and really very disruptive moments in their lives is bad for them, but very comforting for the rest of us. Because we're not all just sort of born TV presenters or successful journalists or whatever. And everybody has to overcome something at some stage in their life. And I was listening to the Jake Humphrey podcast recently, and that notion of sort of having to overcome things and not knowing what's going on behind closed doors and in people's heads and in their private lives is so crucial to remind yourself of, because you know, you compare yourself to people in the media and you think, oh my God, how do they do it and how are they so together? But they're not necessarily. They're just trying to do a job like the rest of us. And I think it's quite empowering to remind yourself of that.
I mean, yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, the podcast was sort of born out of that desire to find out if it wasn't just us.
Yeah.
You know, because Jim, when we obviously first sort of started toying with the idea of this podcast, the idea that I was going through kind of a problem with writing, I was having, like, you know, writer's block. I know some people say there's no such thing, but you know, I've experienced it, so I'm sure there is. And Jim obviously was having sort of like trepidation about getting back and performing. And I guess that's how it started, was this kind of like, we were both in these kind of the creative doldrums slightly, and sort of wanting to seek out kind of, I don't know, find comrades maybe, or to sort of hear from other people if they were having some things, or just actually just to sort of get some advice. Mm. And I guess as we kind of started recording, it was very early on that I thought, wow, there's so much in this. Within the first sort of 10 minutes of recording with our first guest, I think, thinking, actually, shit, there's like, we could go all over the place with this thing.
And we have done.
And we have done, and the you know, the actual kind of premise of the podcast has sort of evolved, as well as, you know, the various things that have come up on it have evolved, and, you know, we're forever being surprised at what someone's blank moment might be. You know, it's covered so many different things now, and that's what's always exciting, actually, sitting down every week and hearing, you know, what that person's particular thing is and how they get through it, or and if they're not getting through it, how they're sort of proposing to get through it. So yeah, it's been lovely. And I think also, sort of going back to those first moments, it was I felt early on as well that it would translate well into a book of some sort. I really had a sort of strong desire from early doors that there might be something in this. And So it was great to be able to connect with you, and I love what Quadrille do anyway. I think you've got a wonderful book, so it's very exciting to be working with you on it.
Great. It's very exciting for us too, because it's a little bit different for us, and we have other non-illustrated narrative books, like we've just published Ovi Soko's book You Are Dope, which is, I don't know, it's, you know, there's some synchronicity there with what you're doing a little bit, because he wants to reach out, especially to young people, about letting positive energy into their lives. And I guess in a roundabout way, that's what you guys are doing with this book, is saying, look, blankness doesn't have to be a negative thing. It is an exciting addition to our publishing list for next year. And I'm pleased with the cover. I think it sort of draws you in. It's packed full of insight. And one of the elements I like about it, that really, one of the things that touched me most, I think, with the podcast, with the episodes I've listened to, are Marcus Brigstocke's, and his revelation that he writes a gratitude list every morning. And I don't know why that surprised me so much, but it did for some reason. I suppose it's this thing we were just talking about where you see somebody on TV and you wrongly make assumptions about them. And I suppose there's this thing with comedians in there that everybody thinks they must be hilarious all the time and totally together. And
it's normally the exact opposite. Just,
yeah, and a bundle of happiness.
Being a comedian yourself.
But the gratitude list was really a fascinating concept for me because I've known about them, and I guess thought it was very spiritual people who wrote gratitude lists, or people who were very in touch with, I suppose spiritual people is one way of putting it. And then to hear that Marcus Brigstocke does it without fail every morning and has done for, I can't remember how many years.
I think it's over 20 years, because I think it's part of, I mean, going back to that episode, I think it was part of his drug addiction recovery. Yeah. So it's something that he's really kept hold of because, you know, it just helps. You know, it's part of his recovery. And, you know, I guess as an addict, he is always in recovery.
Yeah. I found that really fascinating. And of course, I said I would do it myself, but I haven't yet.
Same.
We as a family, and I've said about this on the podcast in the last few weeks, have started doing it. And in the evening, when we're eating dinner together, we say one good thing, one bad thing, and one thing we're grateful for. And actually, it's amazing, actually. And for the kids, it's a really good outlet as well. And just to know what's going on for them. But for all of us, I mean, I find it really, really helpful just to, like we were saying before, to talk and to communicate when, you know, things aren't going well. You know, if you're having a bad day, to be able to sort of sit around and actually explain what's causing you to have a bad day and how it makes you feel. And then, you know, to then sort of put a more positive spin on it and talk about something that you're really grateful for. It's really empowering. It's really, I suggest you both get on it very soon.
Well, we do it. Miranda and I do it. We don't write it, but we do it intermittently. We're not very consistent, but late at night, if we're both haven't gone to sleep, we'll lie in bed and say, what are you grateful for today? And we don't do it all the time, but when we do it, it always feels better. And I think that idea that like gratitude lists is only something spiritual people do, I think I kind of thought that about a lot of things in that realm, gratitude lists, mindfulness, that kind of thing. I always kind of thought, good idea, but not something for me. But actually, they're all incredibly accessible and doable and done by many people who you might think wouldn't be into that kind of thing. And I think that's something I've learned through the podcast as well. There are loads of people like me, creative people, who do have these things that they do to put their mind at rest or reset themselves a little bit or start the day. And actually, they really are very doable. But again, it comes back to that relatability thing. You know, all these people we've spoken to, you know, and many of them are huge, huge names and huge stars, are so much more like us and like me and like me and my friends. And, you know, I quite often think about that quote from Joe Cox, who said, there's more that unites us than divides us. Or there's more, I'm paraphrasing, I've got that slightly wrong, but, you know, we are more similar than the things that divide us. And that is just such a theme that comes out in the podcast for me every single episode. Mm. And it's really reassuring. You know, we're all parts of the same human race, and we are here on this planet. Wow, I'm getting really big, aren't I? Here on this planet together, aren't we? And so we might, you know, and we are more similar, so we might as well find our ways to connect to each other and make our lives, you know, happier as a result. So, yeah, it's just this whole, I've really rambled there. The whole process of the pod and doing the book has just been such an enlightening experience for me. Enjoyable, challenging, but really eye-opening at the same time. It's almost like we timed this book perfectly, because what's been a very challenging year for so many people, now is the time to be practicing mindfulness, or even just to be thinking about it, or thinking about the things that you relate you to other people, maybe the people you haven't seen for 7 months. You know, now is the time really to be exploring those themes. And so, yeah, well done, team. I think we've timed this absolutely perfectly. Well done.
But what is nice, though, you're saying about that, bringing actually talking about that gratitude list. I think that's nice that the book has got elements of practicalities for people as well. You know, yeah. I think there are lots of takeaways in the book. You know, hopefully lots of things people will be able to sort of look at them, reflect on their own situations. But I think that sort of some practical measures that people can put in place, you know, there's obviously some tips on getting to sleep. And then, you know, we're talking about doing some blankfulness stuff in there as well. So I think those things, you know, some practical things that people can take away is, I think that's nice when books have those elements to them as well. So it's, yeah, I'm really pleased that we've got those things in there.
Yeah. I was thinking about some of the things that I've picked up on, you know, this sort of tangible piece of advice as well from the book. And it's quite simple, really. But when Reginald D. Hunter says that in terms of creativity, when he has these blank moments and nothing's flowing and he's just like, just find what works for you. You know, do you crave quiet or do you crave a certain kind of music that's going to lift you up or something? Find it, put that music on, or just stop what you're doing if it's just not working. And think about whether the blankness might be coming from somewhere else in your life, because the chances are it's not just that you're having a mental block about this sentence. It is because something else is going on and you're just probably trying to ignore it. So that's a kind of more profound point. But just find what works for you is such a simple idea. But, you know, sometimes it is as simple as, you know, move to a different room. Mm. Go outside for 10 minutes and look at the sunshine. Come back in. Bake yourself a peanut butter and jam sandwich or something, and then sit back down again and think, okay, I've just come out of myself for a few minutes and I'm coming back in and I already feel a little bit more like I'm ready for this. And sometimes it's just really small things like that. Yeah. And also not being too hard on yourself.
Yeah.
Because these moments, just, they're part of life. That sounds trite, but they are. You don't know what they're going to lead to, and you can't possibly be productive and fruitful and successful all the time, every day. You can't.
Yeah.
No, and I would argue, you know, I would caveat that by saying, yeah, like we, this podcast and the book and everything surrounding it wouldn't have come out, would have came out of a blank moment. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, there was, you know, for me and for Jim. So I think, yeah, certainly. Like, I think sometimes you can look back and you can think, well, actually, those moments were very positive, actually, because I was able to reset, channel my energies into something else, and good things come out of that.
And I think as well, you know, not being too hard on yourself is really good advice. And also, and again, this might sound a bit simplistic, and I don't mean it to, but if you're sitting down now, listening to this podcast, or you're having a break from doing some writing, whether you're trying to write a book or trying to write a show or something, you're doing great. Even if you're sitting down trying to write it now, you are doing amazing. And I know that sounds a bit like I'm talking to a child, and I don't mean it to, but I mean you are doing great. If you're, even if you're thinking about doing something creative, you're already 100 steps further down the line than you think you are. So really give yourself, if we ever do like a podcast, blank podcast bingo, give yourself the win. Would be my.
We should. Can we do that, please? Because I really.
We did it for FYP. I think we should do it for blank bingo. But it's true. Give yourself the win. Even if you sit down one day and you're thinking about writing a show, and you just think of the title, and that's all you do that day. Great. Give yourself that win. You're going to come down tomorrow and you're going to write the first minute of whatever. When you said that, Celine, don't be too hard on yourself. It really does come up a lot, and it is something that I really try, not always successfully, but try and subscribe to as well, because we're all doing great. We're all doing amazing just by doing the things we're doing. And, you know, I just think we need to, again, with this year, we need to really be kind to ourselves. And it can, if you be kind to yourself one little bit one day, you know, then who knows what you can be the next day and the next day. And I think it can snowball, and you don't know where you can get to, really. So, yeah, you know, we talk about kindness to others, but I think kindness to self is also just as important.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
There you go.
There you go.
Something to think about.
Yeah. Lovely.
Thanks, Jim. Killed the conversation.
That's what I do. That's what I do.
So going back to the book, obviously it's out in March.
Yes, it is.
And yeah, it's got a beautiful cover, actually. I'm really, really chuffed with the cover. I think it's amazing.
It's a great cover.
Yeah, it is a great cover. From Quadrille's point of view, obviously you've alluded to a bit about why you decided to publish the book. Tell us a bit about Quadrille. How long have you been working at Quadrille?
I've been there 7 years. And Quadrille has been going for, I think it's about 24 years. We are still independent. We have a parent company that is called Hardy Grant, and they are based in Melbourne. And so there is a publishing, they publish and generate their own books over in Melbourne that we distribute over here. Mm-hmm. But they also have a little London, Hardy Grant London team that's in the same building as us, and they have their own publishing list. And then there's Quadrille. And so Quadrille publishes, as I mentioned, we specialise in illustrated nonfiction. But in the last 3 or 4 years, we have kind of slightly broadened our areas of publishing so that we do more narrative nonfiction of the kind that Blank is. And so we're always looking for new ideas and proposals in that area. And of course, podcasts lend themselves brilliantly to that. And there are so many more podcasts all the time, and people are getting, especially in 2020, when they've been spending more time at home, podcasts have really boomed. And I totally see why. And there's so much material in there for a book. And, you know, you can listen to many episodes of a podcast and get certain things from it. But then when somebody has put it down in a book, as you will know, and filtered and sorted and curated and tidied lots of different topics into something that works on a printed page, then you've got something entirely different that you can get from the experience of the podcast. So I feel like they go hand in hand really well, the kind of listening and then the reading. So apart from that, and funnily enough, most of what I publish personally is cookery books, so this is quite different for me, but it's really nice, and it's nice to have some variety like that. We're a relatively small publisher, so it feels like kind of bijou publishing, if you like, in the sense that as you will find out even more in the next few months in the lead up to publishing the book, you will liaise with and speak to the same small team of people. I think that's what I love about it, is that everybody who works in the company is very invested in every single book that we publish, because there aren't so many that it becomes a machine, you know. You'll speak to the same people, we know exactly what's going on, and which books are coming out and what they're about and who the authors are, and they'll be on the phone to you or emailing you, and it feels like it matters. Every book matters, and everyone is different, there isn't a sort of Quadrille. There's a Quadrille identity, but there isn't a Quadrille template. So your book will be completely different from any other book that we've published. And the same goes for all our cookery books. And I think that's what makes my job fun, too, is that every day and every author and every book is different. We're always trying to reach more and more people, and thinking, questioning how we market and promote books, and how can we reach a bigger audience. And how can we get people who didn't know they needed this book to pick it up? That's the fun part too.
Well, I've definitely felt part of a team during this, and definitely I can imagine that you might be some publishers where you're sort of an afterthought, but I think actually Charles is nodding. We've definitely felt part of a team, and I think, and again, you know, my experience of this world is obviously very limited / zero, but I feel like Quadrille were exactly the right fit for us, exactly the right team, and we've just sort of, you know, from the off, it's been a really easy, friendly collaboration. So that's great. Been, from my point of view, really, really nice. I'm just wondering if there are people sort of listening and they are working on a book or thinking about writing a book, or that's their kind of world. Have you got any advice for them on, I guess, if they're having maybe blank moments writing it, or anything from a publisher point of view as to what would, or if they're trying to pitch or something, any sort of advice for anyone that's trying to do that?
I was just
as you were talking, I just suddenly thought, oh, that might be quite nice for people listening going for those moments.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are some things I can say, sort of generally speaking. So when you're, especially if we're talking about nonfiction, I'm not qualified to talk about fiction other than what I enjoy reading myself, but I don't commission any. For nonfiction, I think you have to think about why this book is different from something that's already out there. So what's the USP, basically? And that can be, that can take very, very many different forms. That can be, I think I can reach a different market, or I have a different audience in mind for my book, or it's a well-trodden path in terms of the subject, but I, the way that I am writing about it, or my voice is different, or the way I want to present it is different. And definitely just look around. What else is being published? Are there things that inspire you? Can you identify with different authors, I don't know, publicity campaign or their cover design or something? I think that the bigger picture you have of what you're publishing or you want to publish into, the better informed you will be, and the better the chance your book has. So, and then, I don't know, I mean, also just generally speaking, social media. I mean, that's how Giles and I got in touch. And, you know, I'm fairly new to Twitter in the grand scheme of things, and I'm still finding my way. But I discover lots of people, potential authors, subjects, trends, conversations through social media. And that is one of the biggest positives I have to say about it, which is that it connects people in a way that we couldn't even imagine 10 years ago. So, yeah. Even if you are sceptical about social media, or you don't want to tweet or anything like that, just be on it and read things.
That,
oh, I could, I mean, the podcast wouldn't have happened without Twitter. We would never get any of the guests without Twitter. We certainly wouldn't have connected with you without Twitter. So I am, you know, as much as it can be very dark at times, there's an awful lot of light on there as well. And yeah, I think I totally wholeheartedly agree. There's, you know, making connections with people, you just don't know what's going to come of it. You know, I think whether it's a good conversation or an act of kindness, or you're helping your career or whatever it might be, you know, I think it's really important. Actually, it's an important bit that we sort of frown upon it too much these days because of the more difficult elements of it. But I think, you know, I have very, very many positive experiences, so yeah, I totally agree with you.
We talk a lot about social media on this podcast, and I would say 90% negative, to be honest, when we're talking about it and the negative impacts it can have on people and their mental health. And as someone who is wrestling with the idea of not being as much on social media at the moment, certainly Twitter, that's really actually interesting to hear that the positivity that it can have. And I know, obviously, for the podcast, it's been incredibly positive. But I think with all these things, you have to have a balance between the way you use things and the way you let it influence your lives. So I'm still negotiating my way through that path as how I keep Twitter in my life without it. I think I'm a bit addicted to it. So again, without, you know, it overtaking my life too much. But that's really interesting to hear.
I mean, I think, sorry, Jim, I was going to say, I think for our guests, obviously, a lot of them are very high profile. So I guess you get, there is a trade-off. Yeah. There shouldn't be, but I think sometimes there is. Unfortunately, the more people you have connected to you or following you, the more likely you are to get the noisier, sort of slightly more negative aspects of it. So I think probably that is, unfortunately, part and parcel of
like Celine says, life, you can be on there.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's acceptable.
Also, what you're saying is I basically got no followers, so that's why I've got no.
No,
it's interesting what Celine's saying about you can be on it and you not even post. You can just have an account and watch stuff, and that's actually that might be a way actually to reduce the kind of negativity, and you can just pick and choose what you follow and sort of see what's out there without having to interact. So that's interesting. I've not really thought about that before. I think I've always thought with Twitter, well, yeah. I'm on it now, so I better tweet stuff. But you don't have to.
But no, but it's funny, isn't it? Because if we'd been trying to pitch this kind of project in the old days, I would have had to come, you know, would have tried to find an email address, or my agent would have sort of done it, and then it would be weeks and weeks. I could message Celine directly on Twitter, say, "Oh, got this book idea. Would you like to look at it?" And then we're straight into a conversation about it. And so you know, I'm very thankful.
Me too. I am also very thankful.
Yeah. I just wanted to ask you a couple more things, actually. One of them was we talked about acquisitions meetings. Mm. Now, for people who don't know what they are, obviously listeners don't know, it's actually when obviously you've got been sent ideas, or there's, like you say, there's ideas you might have yourself about particular, and you meet up with your, is it just the editorial team, or do you meet up with the sales team as well at this point?
No, so we have weekly, and this, as I said before, this is particular to Quadrill, and every publisher works differently, but at Quadrill we have a weekly editorial team in which we bounce around new ideas, self-generated ideas or proposals that have come in. We discuss them and we see potential in them, whether they can be changed or tweaked. And then out of that comes the sort of idea that we definitely want to take forward, and that's when we take it to an acquisitions meeting. So we are confident that it is well-formed enough, it has got an audience, that we are aware of what the competition is. You know, we've got all these things sorted. We take that to an acquisitions meeting, which is once a fortnight, and that is basically the head of nearly every department in the company. Mm-hmm. And the editor presents the idea, and then we have a discussion about it and how it fits on the list, our publishing list, how it fits in publishing and in the marketplace generally. Again, what the USP is. Can it be summed up? It's that elevator pitch. Can it be summed up in one sentence, one short sentence, which is not that easy quite a lot of the time. And you might feel really strongly about a proposal, but you still can't necessarily do it justice in one sentence. And it's frustrating because you think, well, I don't want to lose this because I can't express it in seven words. Like, it still deserves to be published. So, you know, there's some pretty interesting conversations that happen in those meetings. And then if it's given the green light, as it were, then we would make an offer and take it from there.
So my next question is, how was that with this book? I mean, how did that go? And what was that sentence?
Oh.
Can you remember?
No. No, but I guess the sentence is the subtitle of the book.
Yeah,
I was going to say it was that, yeah.
Which is effectively, if I remember correctly, why it's fine to fail and falter and how to pick yourself up again. I mean, that is the book in a nutshell, I think. Mm. And I think I talked about the fact that it was two men hosting a podcast, and the fact that you have such a stellar list of guests on. I mean, truly exceptional, and from such a wide range of industries and fields, if you like. There's that, and the fact that it is just a book about the human condition, and but in a very accessible way. And what's not to enjoy about that, you know? Kind of want to make it undaunting and encouraging for people to read about challenges and to relate to them and to feel like there's a way to get out of them and over them.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Awesome. The last thing I wanted to ask you was, obviously, we, Jim and I, doing the book, trawled through 60 plus episodes at the time. I mean, there's obviously more now. And sort of, it was really nice actually to go back and listen to the back catalogue and listen to the forgotten conversations, you know, which is really nice because, you know, in real life you have conversations with people, you just totally forget the sort of those moments in them. But it's really nice to be able to go back to these recorded, you know, conversations and hear back what we actually talked about. And I was just wondered I'm going to ask you this as well, Jim, if you've got a favourite blank moment. Or one that particularly stands out to you of thinking, you know, as a takeaway, perhaps.
Ooh, You have a thing, Tim. you've definitely got a bit more material to sift through in your brain.
That's the problem. That's the issue.
It's funny. I didn't expect you to ask me that. I thought you were going to ask me who my favourite guest was.
Well, you can answer that.
and I was going to say Susie Dent for lots of reasons. Were you going to say something, Giles?
No. You get. Because, why was Susie your favourite then?
Well, I suppose because I've admired her for a long time, and essentially she's a wordsmith, if you like, and I very tritely love words, and I'm fascinated by them, and that's one of the reasons I'm an editor, and I love discovering new words, and Susie just seems to be a font of knowledge, but. Even that was interesting in her episode because she says people expect her to be a font of knowledge. And so that can trip her up or trip other people up because there's this enormous untold pressure on her to just know stuff all the time. And the truth is she knows stuff in her area of expertise. And even then she might not be able to recall everything instantly. But there's this expectation that she can just sort of come up with a fact or an anecdote about a word just on the spot all the time. And I found that interesting and a little bit relatable. And I just love the fact that it's like when you meet your heroes and they are just as nice or amazing as you think they're going to be. And I listened to her and I sort of related a lot to her. And I love the fact that she is incredibly intelligent, but very gentle and unassuming with it. And she just seems so lovely.
She is.
She is.
That
she
counts
is very
for
lovely.
So much, you know, intelligence and kindness. Wow.
Well, do you know what? Ironically, on Time Hop today, it posted the picture of me, Jim and Susie. It was 2 years today that we recorded that. So there you go. Oh, that's a weird serendipity, isn't it?
That's amazing. Oh, I'm really pleased I picked her then.
Jim, have you thought of yours yet?
Yes. I mean, there is one that sticks out, but there's just so many great episodes and great guests. Mm. What I love is the range of guests we get. And what I love is the energy they all bring. So some... You know, we had John Bradley from Game of Thrones on. Some will come in ready to talk about blank moments. I mean, he had prepared a whole list of things. He was in the right mood. He was very serious. And we had a really in-depth, interesting interview about a lot of the problems that he hadn't even spoken about before playing a character on Game of Thrones and then how it seeped into his everyday life. It was fascinating. Then you get people like Sanjeev Bhaskar, who's just a legend and is the nicest guy and comes in and just wants to chat and chat and has so many great stories, but it's just really... relaxed and effervescent and came up with a phrase for us that we've put on merchandise now with happy blank, sad blank. What's the third one? Oh my God.
You've already forgotten it.
Oh dear.
This is really good. Selling the merchandise, yeah. Jim.
Happy blank, sad blank, neutral blank. There we go.
Neutral blank. Yeah. Fearful blank's the other
is
one, not sad
oh my
blank.
God, what's wrong with me?
Happy blank. We'll cut this. Happy blank. We won't. I'm going to leave it in. Happy blank. Fearful
again.
Blank.
happy blank. Fearful blank. Neutral blank, which is a fantastic and I would say very memorable quote for merchandise. But anyway, my two favourite, well, not favourite, but two of my favourite blank moments are... and they're very different, is Rhys Shearsmith when he came on and spoke about social anxiety, which was like a gut punch for me because I just related to it so hard. And I would say it's probably one of the most tweeted about episodes we've had. So many people, pretty much, was it a year and a half old episode? People still tweet us and say, oh, I really relate to that. I have the same problem.
And I'll just caveat that, Jim. I was just going to say that came right at the end of the conversation. We were about to kind of... stop the interview or the chat. I don't like to say the word interview. The conversation was about to finish. And often when we ask that blank, what's your advice, that blank moment bit, and it pops up a whole new line of inquiry, if you like.
Yeah,
sorry,
and
Jim,
he really opened
up. That's amazing.
About that. Yeah. But I think my favourite blank moment that anyone's told us is Caroline Lucas, MP for the Green Party, talking about being very early on in her career, getting the way that the House of Commons runs is so archaic, and everyone's like shouting over each other and will the Right Honourable Minister step aside, and you get your moment. And she was getting really into it as a young MP, and then stood up and couldn't remember what she was going to say in front of 600 MPs. And I cringed when she told us that, because I could feel like how horrible that would be. And getting away with Hansard just putting dot, 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 and Hansard has to legally has to write every single thing that someone says. So they were on her side. And then the fact that ever since then, she's always taken a notepad with notes on. So, you know, she had a blank moment. She learned from it. It's changed the way that she now, you know, does her job. So, and the fact that she's an absolute legend for me as well, when, you know, she's a real rock star for me, Caroline Lucas. So I was very nervous meeting her. But yeah, that was an incredibly memorable moment. And just again, that's an example of our guests coming on, high profile guests with a lot to lose, really being really honest about these moments where they've screwed up. And that's the beauty of the podcast and the book, I think.
Yeah, likewise, saying about the beauty of podcasting and how people forget, I think sometimes they're being recorded. I mean, even now when we're, you know, doing it via Zoom, there's still that candidacy, which is so wonderful that people feel relaxed and reassured that they can open up to us about, you know, very difficult things. I mean, I think in recent months we've had David Harewood came on and talked incredibly emotionally about his breakdown that he had during his life. And a thing that people, I think for him as a well-known person, was the fact that people would come to him for advice and reassurance, and that weight of expectation on him to kind of come up with the key ingredients to help them just took its toll on him and made him spiral down again. And we all shed a tear. Yeah, I think, on that one. It was very emotional. And then we had again a very emotional episode with Sarah Bailando, who was an actress who's sort of started her career as a professional tennis player, and then had a terrible road accident and lost movement in her arm. And she told us so many in-depth details about that, the whole incident, the accident, the aftermath. And again, we all got very, very emotional. So those ones always stick in the mind because you're having these such visceral conversations with people. It's incredible. But I think my favourite moment for me, probably just because he's such a hero to me, is Louis Farrugh, because just having to be in a room with him is just, you know, I've followed his career from Weird Weekends to, you know, I just watch it, I devour everything that he does, and I've read his books, and yeah, so just to have him on the podcast was such a treat. And he was so brilliant and funny, very, very witty, And his thoughts on blankness, you know, he got to that point where he was saying that he was trying to sort of like see what the next path was for him, and being at a crossroads in his career and stuff, which again I haven't heard him ever talk about before or be that candid on any interviews before. That was a really special moment that he felt like he could sort of talk to us about that, and yeah, say that that blankness for him was, you know, constant thorn in his side. It was always there with him, and again, yeah, it was a really lovely moment. So yeah, that's probably my favorite. And we made him drink out of a coffee out of a glass as well, which I feel quite embarrassed about.
We made
now.
A lot of our guests do that, bringing them down to earth on the Blank podcast.
He
was a legend, absolute legend. Just sort of wrapping up, what can we say about the book now, where what can we tell people what to do? Can they pre-order it? I like to end with like a call to action, and I just realized halfway through that sentence I don't know what it is.
Okay. It sort of depends when this is going out, but
we can put it out when you want. Basically.
Okay, well, I mean, the book is already available to pre-order on Amazon, but that is my kind of lasting message to the listeners is go buy the book. Pre-order it. I mean, you know, Amazon, I have mixed feelings about Amazon, but obviously you can buy it on many other booksellers' websites. You don't have to go into a bookshop if you're not able to. Waterstones Online, Foyles, The Hive. I love...
I could say Hive, yeah. Can you pre-order from Hive as well?
Yes, I believe you can, yeah.
Okay, cool.
So, you know, there's loads of places you can get it. But the official publication date is the 18th of March next year. And I'm hoping that by that time, the world will look significantly rosier. Yes. And all right, maybe just a little bit rosier, but even still, we'll have got through 2020 and you'll have written this book. And for that reason alone, it will be a successful year. I'm really looking forward to it coming out. I think you should be extremely proud of yourselves. And I feel very honoured to be publishing it.
Thank you.
Well,
I wanted to say, actually, if I haven't said this in private, I want to say, I'll say it publicly, what a joy it's been to work with you and all the team at Quadrio. It's been, you know, it's been a really, really enjoyable process for me. I've loved writing the book, you know, actually writing nonfiction. I never thought I'd write a nonfiction book, and it's just been such a great experience to write it, and really loved, you know, obviously collaborating with Jim on it as well. It's been just a really joyful process. I mean, writing is incredibly hard, as we all know. But actually, you know, with all writing, obviously there has its challenges, but I've never felt like I've never had any moments of feeling pissed off or really like tearing my hair out particularly. So that's great for
me. I'm surprised I've got any hair left. I'm joking.
that's always a bonus. It's been a really, really enjoyable process, and I'm so chuffed with how it's coming out, and huge kudos to everyone at Quadrio.
Yeah, I can only say the exact
same. Thank you very much,
guys. I find it quite daunting, I think, the process of doing it, but you guys have made it a very pleasurable experience for me, so thank you very much. And now I can officially say I'm an author, so thank you for helping me do that as well.
Yay!
it was amazing, but it's been a really, really positive experience, so thank you, Celine.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, there you go. That was our lovely commissioning editor at Quadrio, Celine Hughes. And that, what a great episode. I mean, I think we planned this to just be like a kind of special announcement episode, but actually it's like a proper episode of Blank.
Yeah, well, this is what, you know, when we get great guests on who are able to talk intricately and interestingly about their subject, then inevitably you're going to overrun. And, you know, I found that really, really fascinating talking to Celine about what she does and why they commissioned the book. And I really hope that anyone's listening that is writing a book or has written one will have had a bit of insight there into how to pitch it, maybe, or how to just, when you're setting it out as to where you're going on your journey of writing, what to think about. This whole idea of what's your USP and how does it fit into the markets and stuff is something I never would have considered, and I've only learned through doing this process of writing this book, and I find that really interesting. So we've never really had anyone sort of from industries before, have we, on this? We've normally only had creatives, so I think it's interesting to get that side of how things work.
But actually, what a creative... I mean, obviously, the publishing industry is creative anyway, but actually, your role as an editor, you are being creative all the time. So I think, you know, it is it's really interesting. And I think it was great to hear Celine sort of talking about, actually, I've never worked in doing, like, a non-fiction book before. And obviously, this is your first book anyway, Jim. Yeah. But as opposed to sort of fictional writing, and the differences when you're, you know... Nonfiction is very much more you can pitch an idea and you work and you develop that idea and then it becomes the finished product. Whereas sometimes with fiction, you're kind of, you might have a finished manuscript or you are, you know, two or three chapters in or whatever it might be. There's a lot more kind of prepared work, if you know what I mean. So it's like different. I mean, for people, we didn't really talk about it too much on the pod, but so the idea of the book came about really, like I said, early doors when we were doing those first re-recordings, thinking actually there's a lot in here that we could develop into sort of into other things, you know, maybe a book or maybe some blog posts or whatever it might be. I knew there was extra kind of fodder there. And I think, you know, I'd sort of mentioned it to you, and then We started to sort of put together some maybe chapter ideas, and then that is what we went to Celine with. You know, I messaged Celine on Twitter, I DM'd her. I knew Quadrille were a great publisher. I liked some of their stuff they'd put out. I think they'd have some history of doing working with podcasts before, so I just thought they'd be the perfect fit for us. And just said, look, this is the kind of idea we've got. These are the themes. We're two guys opening up about all these different issues, and you know, this is kind of the concept. And then we just kind of developed it, and you know, we started writing a few sort of chapters and stuff, and then it kind of went from there. So it's really interesting, the differences. I'd never would do that with a fiction title. So that's really interesting to see those differences between the two types of publishing.
Yeah, I've learned a lot through this process. It's been fascinating, real interesting journey into a world I never thought I'd ever be a part of, to be honest. So it's been really eye-opening, and certainly this year as well. You know, it's been a pretty rubbish year, but to be able to work on something like this and learn a lot about the industry and become an author, I'm really proud of that. Proud.
Well, you should, man.
Seeing my name on Amazon as an author, you know, it's not something I ever thought I'd do. So I'm very, very proud of that. Indeed. So let's remind people that I've closed my tab. What an idiot.
You can get the book. It will be available from the 18th of March. You can pre-order it now from online outlets or from your local bookshop. You can go to hive.co.uk. You can find it on there. It is called, Jim?
Blank, Why It's Fine to Falter and Fail and How to Pick Yourself Up Again by Charles Paley Phillips and Jim Daly.
There you go. Look.
It's official.
Naming lights
it's
at
official.
Last.
So yeah, we hope you've enjoyed this special episode. We hope that you'll pre-order the book or buy it when it comes out, and we really, really hope you'll enjoy it and get as much out of the book as we did writing it, and obviously from the podcast as well. So yeah, thanks for listening to this special episode. Please buy the book.
Bye, bye, bye. Goodbye.
At Costa, we believe that whatever you've got planned, it's probably best to have a coffee first. The flat white that puts a spring in your step for your 90th stroll round the block. The cappuccino that helps you choose your first haircut in months. Or the latte that gets you excited to commute again. Well, almost. Which is why at Costa, we're here to help you enjoy your favourites, whether you click and collect, pick up from a Costa Express machine, or get it delivered to your door. T's and C's apply. See costa.co.uk/terms.
This is Letters from a Killer, a Podimo podcast series.
Over the past 5 years, we've been receiving letters from killers facing life in prison or the death penalty in an attempt to learn about their lives and what caused them to commit murder.
I am not guilty of intentionally killing her, and they knew it.
Letters we are now bringing you in a brand new podcast series, Letters from a Killer.
I only thought, why is this happening at all?
Like, share, and follow now, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Blast Box Media Podcast.